Welcome to the MLS Net Boys Experience. We are Jacob and Chase. Welcome to the show. How's it going?
It's going good, man. It's going good. Semi-spring weather here. Another solid week of our team just playing like booty cheeks in the first half and, and turning it around the second half. But all in all, an exciting and fairly eventful week in MLS.
You get the true emotions of being a fan watching that Timbers SKC game for both sides. I was I was hanging out in the Sporting Kansas City Reddit earlier today. I was
you'd common Redditor now.
Yeah.
Got a fedora at home.
I don't have the app, so I do it on my web browser. So I'm not that far in, but on my phone that is. But I was just reading a comment, and one of the comments on there was like, yeah, like I drove up from some city that was like kind of far away. Like my wife surprised us with tickets. Like we got tickets. We made a day out of it. Like we drove all the way out for this game. Just like, I was just like thinking of all the disappointment that guy just experienced. Cause I was at a game for Portland when my team went up 2-0 at home and then just coughed up a lead in the second half. But 3-0 in the first half, missing a penalty to make it 4, like
that's brutal.
After blowing a 2-goal lead like the week 2 weeks prior to is wild.
Well, what would be the worst fan experience? Like if you were to be a fan of one random team and like a random like memorable game or just experience, like, cuz that's a pretty terrible experience. And I mean, I can't relate. It's not like I drove 8 hours to Canada last week and watched my team lose in dramatic fashion in the late stages of the game.
That was pretty bad. I was thinking about that because when I was watching that, I've never been to a game. I've been to games where they lose before. Not very rarely, honestly. I've only been to like 3 or 4 losses in like 12 years of going. I go to like 5 games a year, but I've never been to one where it's like you get caught up in like the late game heartbreaking like winner against your team. I guess kind of last year the closest one I can equate was Kai Kamara scored for Chicago in like the 77th minute or something like that to give Chicago the win in Portland, but that's like the closest to like a late game heartbreak I've ever seen.
I think I have a definitive answer, and it would be any fan in the league taking like an away day trip to like RSL or Minnesota and watching their team lose, like in the winter especially, because those are just two, mainly RSL, like two teams where it just would, there's not a lot to do in that area, so it'd just be like a pretty crappy away day, and then to watch your team lose on top of it would just be horrible.
Chase alienating our fans.
No, I mean,
our Utah fan base.
I respect the clubs, I respect the fan base, and like if you live there it's completely different, you know. But like imagine, I mean, you've been to RSL Stadium.
I did that, and just, I did it on decision day to lose to knock us out of the playoffs, which is pretty rough.
That would just be like, there's so many other teams, like I was looking through the list right now where I could see like a warranted reason for why you would travel there and still be able to get a good time out of your trip. Like I went to Vancouver and watched my team lose, and I at least got to like explore Vancouver. There's a lot of cool stuff there.
Decent place, yeah.
Pretty cool city. RSL is pretty low, pretty low on the list of like just a cool area to go visit for like the city life. You know, I'm sure there's like some cool hikes and whatnot around that area. Some beautiful scenery.
For me, when I'm weighing, because me, you, and our other buddy Ryan have talked about this, different going to an away game like that we've never been to as a Timbers fan. And for me, for anybody listening, if I was to pick an away day, obviously if you're whoever your main club is, I would recommend going to like the rivalry match in the away team stadium, just because it's super fun, the atmosphere is good, like people will like banter with you, it's a good time. So, like, for us, like, Seattle, Vancouver would be on that list, and it's, you know, not as far typically. But when I look at the calendar and I think of, like, cities that would be fun to go to, like, any of the Texas ones seem like it would be kind of interesting, because it would be cool to go to Texas and Dallas and Houston and Austin. They seem like fun cities. Like, some of the bigger cities obviously seem cool, like Toronto or New York or Miami, obviously. But you're going to disagree with this. But for me, I'd rather go to an away day at Salt Lake than, like, Columbus. Columbus,
really?
Columbus, Ohio doesn't seem like a bad city. Don't get me wrong. But I feel like they fall into that category where it's just like, it's like a normal city. Like, there's, I've never been there, but there's not a ton to, like, separate them apart. Whereas Salt Lake isn't the biggest city, but downtown Salt Lake, it's like, kind of remind me of Portland a little bit. It's like quieter, you know, it's not like a busy city, but you do have all those mountains and hikes and stuff all around. So personally, I'm taking RSL.
I see what you mean. Columbus, not the most exciting town. And let me shift the goalposts a little bit here. I think the one thing you could get out of it is, even if your team loses to Columbus, you get the privilege of watching probably the best team in the league. Versus if you go to RSL and watch your team lose, you just get to watch Chicho Arango just score like a snap header at the near post and then just like freak out while his hair like flails behind him.
Yeah.
But no, I agree. Columbus would be a pretty terrible one, too. Like, I don't disagree with that at all.
For the soccer reasons, it'd be like one of the best to go to. I'll say that. The stadium, the atmosphere, the team, amazing. In Columbus, it's not like I would love to go there on an away day. I'd love to go to any away place, but especially from where we're at, like geographically, Salt Lake is a lot closer. And I don't know. The worst, I'll change that. It's definitely not Columbus. It's probably New England. Like,
I'm going to disagree with that, actually.
Boston seems kind of cool, but I've never been there. But just this experience at Gillette kind of seems underwhelming, I won't lie.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but the city of Boston itself is pretty awesome. I went and toured a college there when I was a younger man looking for schools to go to, and it's a pretty sweet city. They have like a, I think it's called like the Freedom Trail or something that runs through it, where it's like this massive city, and they have these old like historic buildings from like the 1800s there that are just like baked into their downtown. And they have throughout their city, the Freedom Trail is like this brick like kind of trail that goes through the sidewalks, and you can see it anywhere in the city, and if you just start following it, you end up at like historical landmarks throughout the city, which is, it's pretty cool because it's like a big like line that takes you all throughout the city. Pretty sweet.
Pretty cool. Like the history aspect is,
that's why I would go to Boston to go watch the New England Revolution tie Portland Timbers 0-0.
Yeah,
there's a lot of stinker away days in this league for like, sure, but
any of them, I feel like. Honestly, though, there are stinker ones, but going to a big city in America or Canada, you're going to have, you'll find something to do in the area, like even in Columbus, mentioned. But that would just, because, like, I would rather go to, I would honestly probably too rather go to, like, Boston than Columbus. It's just, like, weighing the soccer aspect or, like,
yeah.
Anyway.
Kind of funny we brought that up because I've been seeing this, like, trend on TikTok lately where a bunch of like British people and like Europeans are just like making fun of Americans for not being well traveled because they don't go to other countries.
I've seen that.
And then I just see a bunch of people like respond to it by just like overlaying a map of America over Europe, and like they're just like, there was one guy who was talking about how he like lived in Boston and he would like work in the summer at Yellowstone Park and he would drive it, and he's like, the equivalent of that is me driving from, like, England to, like, Athens, Greece. And it's so funny, like, how there's just a lot of Europeans don't understand how massive this country is. And I got into an argument recently in the TikTok
well done
comments.
Well done, lad.
Somebody was, they were talking about the, like, the developmental, like, system here in the U.S. with, like, soccer and how it's broken, and they compared it to Japan and the J-League and how it's just like one uniform system, and there's like the top tier, the second tier, and the third tier. And like in the U.S. it's like, a mess because there's all these different like regional leagues and there's no like true top tier across the whole country. And I was like, well, it's already, I made the point that it's hard enough for like professional and semi-professional teams to travel across the country. So imagine like having
flying kids out.
Yeah, like a U-12 team like have to travel like across the country to go play, like at that age it's like 60 minutes go play like a 60 minute game. But yeah, I had a lot of people trying to flame me in that, and I was fighting for my life in that in that comment section.
That's a good point, because I do see the comparisons between Japan and the U.S. J League versus MLS, the national team with the U.S. national team. And I feel like people expect the U.S. soccer culture to just be like this plug and play, like copy and paste of like a major European nation, yeah, or like a successful Asian team like Japan, when there's so many different factors here geographically, the sporting culture, how long the league has even been here, and people just don't understand how different it is.
Yeah, and it's been more of like a hot button issue recently, I'd say, with like how many eyes have been turned on soccer. And European soccer is definitely a lot more popular in the U.S. than it ever has been. So a lot of people are looking at like the way their youth system works and comparing it to the U.S. and this whole like pay to play. Like, I do air quotes because it's like it's half true, but it's not at the same time, because from my experience and what I've been around, if you're a good enough player, you never really have to pay in the U.S. Like,
they'll put you through.
Yeah, just about every club is going to be very expensive to play at. But if you're an exceptional player, you almost never have to pay. And I think everybody knows like a guy like that who came from a family that didn't have much money, but he still is playing on this like top team where other kids are paying $2,000-$3,000 a year to play. So, but we'll get onto that later. Generation Adidas Cup is going on, or just finished up actually. So we'll discuss that later. But let's dive into this week in MLS. What's our first game we got?
First game is Vermont Green versus Carolina.
We should just do a USL episode. Just go through USL 2 or something like that.
Hey, I'd be here for that. But Cincinnati hosting the New York Red Bulls. The Red Bulls win 2-1 on the road at Cincy. Came from behind as well. Frankie Amaya gets a goal. Dante Van Zier gets a goal. He's in great form. But Frankie Amaya scores against his former team. Didn't hesitate to celebrate against him as he was getting rained down with booze, so that was kind of interesting to see. We both predicted a Cincinnati win in this game. We were both incorrect, but the Red Bulls, man, continuing their great form, continuing looking exceptionally well, taking down Cincinnati, and now they're top of the East.
Looking great. Two things about this game. First, is Corey Baird a waste of a signing? Because they started Yuya Kubo as a striker. This guy last season was playing as a
center mid, wing
CDM
back
for them. He's traditionally like a center attacking mid, but he played as CDM. So far this season, he's played as left wing back, right wing back, CDM, center attacking mid. And now he is their starting striker over Corey Baird, who they signed in the summer from Houston. I mean, what? It's kind of a weird career decision for him, I guess, at this point to have gone to. I see the, you know, the desire. It's like the supporter shield from last year, like the best team in the league, but he hasn't really gotten any significant minutes. I don't. What do you think of that?
For Corey Baird, it's interesting because I remember us talking about it, and most people were pretty, I don't know if impressed is the right word, but we're thinking this was a good fit because for Cincy, they let go of Brandon Vasquez. But what most people were expecting was if Corey Baird is going to be the direct replacement for Vasquez, like, they're probably not going to do as hot. But if he's like the first guy off of the bench, he's more of a, like a utility man playing in all these different competitions, it'll be decent. And I mean, he started a lot of their games this year, but he hasn't scored. He hasn't looked convincing, really. And I think he's just one of those players where he's more of a roster player. He's a great option on the bench, one of the best, but he's not your starting caliber player in MLS anymore.
I've never been high on Corey Baird. And I love to see him lose his spot to a backup right back, taking his spot as a striker. I think that's hilarious.
I don't really have much else to say about that. It's like, it's disappointing. Good for the Red Bulls. They win at Cincy, which is a top of the table match. Top of the league now, actually, not just the Eastern Conference, but top of the Shield standing. So
I was going to talk about that as well. So we both predicted Red Bulls outside of the playoff spots. Who's been more impressive for you this year? The Red Bulls, who are top of the East.
Seattle.
Or I'll give you a couple options. You got Vancouver, who's top of the West, who we both predicted not that great. And then you got Galaxy, who we both weren't very high on either.
For me, I would put it Red Bulls, then Vancouver, and then Galaxy.
Galaxy is the least impressive for you.
Both, all very impressive. I think Red Bulls, top of the league, speaks for itself, but more importantly, in the Eastern Conference, playing some tough games, like at Cincinnati, like that's the game Vancouver, LA, Galaxy haven't had to deal with. Whereas you see Vancouver and LA, they've both played at San Jose. LA Galaxy had a down bad Sounders team. They played, Vancouver played at Dallas. And I'm not even discrediting those teams, but I don't think it compares as impressive as Red Bulls. All still very impressive.
I would almost completely agree with you. I'd say Red Bull is definitely the most impressive, but I'd say Galaxy's a lot closer to that than Vancouver. Vancouver's had the softest schedule. They've had the most consistency. It's been a pretty much the same team, same coach when he's there. And then you got Galaxy, who last season, like, their fan base was just up in arms, and they just, the change they made in 1 year is like proof of how quickly you can change your fortunes in MLS. Like, their fan base is back on their side. I saw something about how, like, this last game they paid like $100,000 to like ship like a bunch of their fans to like BMO Stadium to go like support their team away at LAFC, which is pretty cool.
I saw that. I would agree. I'd change it to Galaxy ahead because I think
you already made your decision.
I think the way they've played too makes it more impressive. They haven't lost at home. That threat of Paintsil and Peck and Puj and Jovalić looks really good already, and they haven't really had, you know, much time to gel, but it looks pretty good. I saw that their, you know, organization spent all that money to send fans, and then I was thinking about it. They're both in LA, so like,
yeah, why did it cost so much?
Why did it cost $100,000? Did they like rent like a charter bus for like a 20-minute like ride?
I can't imagine why it would cost them that much. Like, that's like the one game where it would be like, you probably shouldn't even do that. You should do it for like a game in like San Jose,
yeah,
like the Cali Classico or like a something like game. That, like a playoff game. Like, why? I guess it's kind of cool because it is like, it is their biggest rival now. Like, it's definitely taken the spot of San Jose, but yeah, it is like a weird move and definitely a lot of money to drop on a 20-minute drive.
Yeah, either way, a cool gesture. I'm always down.
They were just doing helicopter flights for like groups of five fans at a time or something.
I want to say it was Steven Gerrard when he signed there. I could be completely making this up, I'm not sure, but he like bought like beer for the entire supporter section on one end of the stadium, like for his debut, and it was like a gesture. And
true Scouser right there.
Also, funny story about him that I heard on a podcast the other day. I have no idea if this is true. It could be completely fabricated, but was listening to a show, and I think it was the MLS UK show, which makes sense, but he was saying, like, they were talking about players who have been bought into MLS and bought into the league and who cared and, like, were really stuck in. Gerrard didn't really pan out too well. That gesture was nice, buying beer, but there was some story where apparently some like British guy went to LA on like a holiday or something, or for a work trip or something, and he bumped into Gerrard like in the bathroom of like a club or like a fancy restaurant or something, and he's like, oh man, like, should I check out one of your games? And Gerrard just goes, yeah, don't bother, like, we're just garbage this year. like something like that while they were like going at the urinal. So
love it.
That's some MLS lore that could be completely made up.
That's an iceberg moment if it's true.
Could be completely made up. I've never heard it anywhere else, but he's been out of the league for 7 seasons. We're going to move on to the Columbus Crew hosting DC United. Kind of a weird game here. You had Cucho Hernandez returning to the lineup after being gone in the Champions League game. Wilfred Nancy was not having it when any reporters were asking him about it. He was just like, yep, it was a team policy break or a breach of agreement, and he wasn't there. I'm not answering it anymore. And he would just like keep on giving this uniform statement.
He's pretty tight-lipped about that sort of stuff because this isn't the first time he's had to handle it. Like, I think it was last season or the season before when Nagby wasn't playing, right? Like, or Nagby was getting, like, very limited game time. And when he was asked about it, he just said, like, he knows what he did. Like, very just, like, he's very good at, like, keeping it under wraps, but...
Yeah, whatever it is,
I've heard the speculation, I've heard from, like, people who are, like, close to the team. They said it was how he reacted to being subbed out in the Charlotte game. When Wilfred Nancy wasn't there, he was ill that game, so it was the assistant coach, and he got subbed out in, like, the 60 or, like, 70th minute, and I guess he just, like, absolutely threw a fit, like, made a big deal out of it, went straight to the locker room, and Wilfred Nancy just, like, didn't want any of that and just didn't play him for 2 games straight.
He really does remind me of Joseph Martinez. Just they have that killer, just, like, lethal instinct and goal, but also seemed like a major hothead.
Yeah.
And for Cucho's credit, he's still in form. But 1-1 draw, I don't even think I said that.
No.
Benteke scores first. So DC was up, but then Cucho gets a red card in the 75th. Columbus is down a man, but Aiden Morris with a banger goal in the 87th minute to tie it up. A point apiece. DC, good point at Columbus, honestly.
I would agree with that, except for when you look at the game state of they were up 1-0. Columbus lost their striker. So at that point, you should be able to control the game. And if you just look at, like, a snapshot of the above-field picture of when Columbus scores, you just see, like, they're just completely surrounding DC's box, and DC is just defending so deep. Like, their whole team is behind the ball in the 87th minute when they have an extra player. It was kind of wild to me to see Aiden Morris score because... he had time on top of the box when he's down a man with his team and his, like, center backs are 5 yards behind him. And it's just kind of fun to see Columbus not change their style of play at all. But, you know, props to both teams. DC getting a point in a tough place to go play. Props to Columbus for grinding out a result. And props to Wilfred Nancy for being a stickler to the rules. I kind of like that, honestly. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think any player is above the team. I feel like there's certain reactions you see where people are like, well, it's Cucho. He has to play. We're playing against Tigres in the Champions League. Like, it's the biggest match of the year. We need our best player. But, I mean, I think that shows from Wilfred Nancy, like, Cucho's not in charge. Like, this team can do stuff without him.
Yeah.
And that... there's bigger things than just one player's attitude because he got subbed out a little early. Because what does that message say, like, to the guy who subbed in for him? Like,
yeah,
this guy isn't worth it. Like, I should be out there. Like, I'm way better than him. Like,
yeah. Well, and you hear it very often. Like, there's 2 sets of rules on teams a lot of time. Like, there's the rules for, like, the star players, and then there's the rules for everybody else. And it's fun. It's fun to see a coach kind of just have one set of rules for everybody and doesn't put up with any of that BS.
Do you think if Messi did that, the same thing would happen?
Probably, but if Fafa Picolt did it, I don't think he would get punished.
Moving on to Messi and Miami hosting the Colorado Rapids at home. This ends as a 2-2 draw, the mighty Rapids. And I will say this, Lionel Messi has never beaten Colorado. The Rapids are undefeated against Lionel Messi. A 2-2 draw. Yeah, Colorado goes up 1-0. Then Miami storms back. Messi checks in, scores a goal, gets an assist. Miami's up 2-1 within a few minutes. And then Cole Bassett in the 88th minute. That guy's been, like, pretty clutch for them this season. Scores the goal. It ends as a 2-2 draw. Thoughts?
Pretty weak Miami lineup from the start. I saw this lineup when they announced
the
it.
The best bench of all time in MLS.
I was just looking at it. I was like, this is brutal. And then, yeah, like you said, you look at their bench and they got Busquets, Lionel Messi, Jordi Alba, Diego Gomez. They have their new outside back, Marcelo. I can never pronounce his name correct. It's like Weigant or something like that. And then Luis Suarez, who didn't actually get into this game. CJ Dos Santos. You got Nicolas Freire and then Benjamin Kermanski back in the lineup. Cool to see that. But yeah, this would be a completely different game if they had started all those guys. But considering they have a midweek game just about every week now, kind of makes sense that they're resting some players.
Yeah, no, I agree. And probably would have been a different game they all played. But for me, I don't view that as like a diss on Colorado, because this is like one of Miami's weaknesses, is they're not going to be able to play all these guys all the time. And they knew that getting into this. They knew that with this aging group of Barcelona stars and the crazy long preseason trip, like fitness and stuff and rotations were going to occur. So,
well, and when you're Colorado in this situation, you take advantage of it. You get a point, you know, on the road against one of the best teams in the league. Like, you don't not take advantage of that. So good on Colorado. No matter who you played against, you know, who was in pink, you still got a point out of it.
That's right. I love seeing afterwards, there's a video of, like, some of the Rapids players, like, applauding. They had, like, a small group of, like, fans out there, which goes back to what we were saying. I mean, the travel from Colorado to Miami, Florida is not, like, that's not a day
trip.
And to have that many, to have a decent amount of fans there, it wasn't a ton, but even a couple hundred, and they're not just bandwagoning, wearing pink jerseys, supporting Manchester City and United and Arsenal,
that's
big clubs.
31-hour drive if you were to make the drive down to go
straight
watch your team.
That's wild. Moving on to a bigger matchup with some bigger players. The New England Revolution hosting Charlotte. Some controversy leading up to this. Caleb Porter, winless on the year before this, guaranteeing a win. Dean Smith, old Dino, at Charlotte, taking some shots back at Caleb Porter, saying you shouldn't guarantee anything when you don't know what's coming to you, what's going to happen. But the Revs beat Charlotte 1-0 at home. Carlos Hill with a great goal. I mean, they finally did it. They finally won a game.
Is this the return of the Revs from like a year or two ago?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, this is kind of like a nothing win. Like, the Revs have not proved very much this year. They just look
Charlotte is
so
not
poor.
Charlotte is not the team to have a statement win against, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, a win puts you in the right direction. I don't think the Revs are going to be by and far out the worst team in the league like they have been throughout these first 6-7 weeks of the season, but step in the right direction. They get a win. You can get 3 points, you know, against the team ahead of you. I don't care that it wasn't 3-0 or 4-0. Like, if you're the Revs, you just want 3 points, especially at home. So,
yeah, that's huge. And I guess the one thing you can take away from it is the fact that, like, Carlos Hill was the guy that got the goal. Like, definitely really had to lead this team here.
Random. Remember the thing I sent you of just the man of the match award, and it was just the Revs, and they posted this picture on their official New England Revolution account, and it was just Carlos Hill, like, he had his jersey off, he's wearing this like Under Armour, and they gave him like a 3-foot tall like carnival bag of like kettle corn just to pose as like the man of the match. Like,
it almost feels like satire at this point. Like, they have the worst like fake fan culture, whatever it is. Like, first the T-box thing, and now this. Just
the T-box thing, corny. This I don't mind. I have no idea what this even is for, but there's a Twitter account, I forget the name, but it's called like Football Man of the Match Trophies, and it just showcases from across the world when, because a lot of teams, like, there'll be like a third tier English team who for like 1 week had like a sponsorship, and they'll like have like a random like fish platter or something at like a local restaurant, and they'll have like the man of the match like be holding that. I think that's class.
That's just weird to me. It's wild. It's such a weird, obscure, like, That's a picture that's gonna live long on obscure MLS that, like, meme pages.
It's gonna like turn up randomly. Yeah,
that's gonna be awesome.
You know when, like, I don't know how much you're in the Twitter sphere, but whenever like you're an MLS team like wins, anytime I see like the opposing teams who lost to them's account, all the comments, it'll be like a picture of that, of Carlos Hill holding a big bag of popcorn, just like really like grained out with like just like loud rap music in the background, and just it'll be like, you just lost to the Boston Tea Party or like something stupid like that. So I'm here for it. We're gonna move on. New York City FC playing at Citi Field, the second baseball stadium they use, and it's a 1-1 draw against Atlanta in New York City. Atlanta doesn't win on the road. New York City doesn't look great.
Yeah, this
I'm not going to dwell on this, honestly.
Honestly, there isn't too much to say about this. Kind of what you expect. One thing I will say, New York City actually producing shots. They had 24 shots in this game. Next thing I'll say, they only had 3 shots on target.
One thing I will say about this, I was on 360 watching, and this game appeared on, and Musif Bakrar just went loose and just absolutely fluffed a shot. Like, just, it was exactly like what you say.
You know what's funny, actually? We were talking about this before. There's this Instagram page just called MLS Sickos.
Shout out to MLS Sickos. Great account.
And they were doing like a fraud watch thing where people like send in who they think's like the biggest like fraud, like team or player or whatever.
Was he on there?
Yeah.
Oh.
I saw, I think somebody, like, they had put like Cucho on there, and then a bunch of the comments were just like, you should have put Bakrar. Like, you got the wrong picture. Because that guy, lightning fast.
If he figures out how to score goals, he will be the best striker in the league.
Have you ever seen those videos where, like, somebody misses a shot and then they, like, see how much they have to increase the size of the goal before it's a goal? They need to do one on that guy, because
just from the first, like, 7 games of the year would be enough for, like, a 1 compilation.
He just blasts the ball so far wide half the time. It's kind of funny to watch, but he is always a threat with his pace. He's like Cade Cowell, kind of. Moving on, though.
Get sold to Chivas.
To an exciting rivalry match here. We got the Vanny Whitecaps versus Toronto FC. Vancouver winning 4-0. They're on fire. They're the top team in the West. They're the best team ever. This is socialism. This is my wife. This is Florence, Italy. Vanni Sartini.
You're going to have to explain that, because somebody's just going to think you're having a stroke. But nope, it's a real Vanni Sartini quote.
After last week, we didn't talk about this, but after last week's game against Portland, Vanni Sartini had a quote in the press, just first game back, obviously filled with a lot of emotion, the Muppet of a man he is.
big moment, he decides to wear a spaghetti sundae hoodie.
I think he wore it again in this game, actually. I saw him wearing the same hoodie with a vest on, which just weird. But no, after he beats Portland, he goes into the press and he says, if that first half was a city, it'd be Florence. If it was a person, it'd be my wife. If it was an idea, it'd be socialism. And that was it. Just the most obscure, weird quote from a just odd old guy.
How does that answer anybody's question?
No, it doesn't.
How does that give anybody any frame of reference on anything?
I don't think he does with most things he says, but I don't know. I think my dislike for Vanni Sartini is starting to bleed through a little bit too much, but
it makes me not... because a lot of... You know, we're like the MLS... We're MLS sickos, right? We like the Kakuta Manes, the Tom Barlow, like those sorts of guys, Griffin Dorsey's.
Yeah.
All those people who are like us, who like those things, really like Vanni Sartini. He's like a cult hero. Like, Eli Lesser this week in MLS, big Vanni Sartini guy. He's just annoying to us. Maybe it's because we're like a rival fan, but like...
It makes
me want to not, like, care like, about Vancouver, which is, like, a team I actually, like, don't have much bad blood for.
Yeah. No, this... he was my vote on the MLS Sickos, like, Instagram page for, like, the fraud, because everybody, like, sucks up to this guy and hails him as this great coach in the league, and I think he has some great ideas, like, tactically, but he hasn't accomplished anything in MLS other than he's won the Canadian championship by beating a bunch of like semi-professional teams that are forced to play like Canadian teenagers against him. And right. then we'll beat like Toronto in the final or Montreal in the final. But in MLS, he's done he's occasionally squeaked into the playoffs and then just got bounced right away.
He's won two Canadian championships, which they play, Canadian Premier League teams, and then Montreal and Toronto are the notable teams in that competition. They beat Vancouver's beaten Toronto in the final twice, which took Toronto FC having like their worst season of all time. And then the year before that, I think maybe it was Montreal they beat in the final, but so they pretty much beat like one decent team and they won a trophy. So
I don't dislike this team or this club at all. Like I
just
like
more
I've
the
said,
guy.
I just think Vanni Sartini is like highly overrated, and maybe if they make like a deep run in playoffs one of these years, I'll say okay, it's starting to finally pan out 5 years later.
I was going to say, haven't they won like two, like between like one and three playoff series in their whole MLS history? It might only be one, honestly.
I think it is only one. But back to this game, they won 4-0 against Toronto, a team that started really hot, but has since lost their best player and hasn't looked quite the same.
Big losses to Kansas City at home, losing hugely at Vancouver. This is one of those games where it just looked like everything fell apart for the Reds, and they just need a result, a belief, a spark, or something at this point before things get too carried away, and that pretty decent start that they had ends up being for nothing. But I'm done with Vancouver.
Yeah, we bashed on them long enough. Let's move on to another rivalry match, which was a prediction match that Jacob got right.
2-1 LAFC win over the LA Galaxy. The only prediction we got right out of any of us this week. But yeah, LAFC's at home and kind of what I thought would happen. Like the lower team in this rivalry for some reason uses these games to like push them with momentum, kind of like the Cascadia Cup has been. I will say dodgy penalty kick call for Bwanga, but LAFC wins 2-1.
Fairly fortunate result, in my opinion. LA Galaxy dominate possession, almost 70% possession in this game. LAFC don't seem to care about possession anymore, but yeah, pretty soft penalty call. Just about everybody in MLS media, every podcast I listen to, everybody agrees it shouldn't have been a penalty, but even after it went to VAR, the referee still called it back for penalty. Dennis Bwanga gets in the box, turns the corner. Mickey Amane slides in, doesn't really get the ball, and like Dennis Bwanga's almost past him, and then sticks his leg out blatantly to like trip himself over Amane. So pretty soft call. Yeah, it definitely could have been assimilation. He was looking for the call, looking for the PK there. But yeah, LAFC kind of needed that to get a little bit of a kickstart in their season. They haven't been too great so far.
I agree. Big, much-needed result against a really good Galaxy team. Galaxy's first loss on the season. So huge 3 points. Gets them kind of back into business. Pushes LAFC to a cool fifth place. But we're going to move on. Austin FC hosting San Jose. And this game made me depressed because Chase pointed out that Austin is now ahead of the Portland Timbers, our club. Because of a 3-point performance, they win 4-3 versus San Jose. And before I even get into like this crazy match, I want to say before this game even happened, I feel like both teams' fan bases were probably like, all right, so if you're an Austin fan, you're like, all right, if we can't beat San Jose, like, we're terrible. I'm sure they would have just thrown it in and like demanded Wolf out. And San Jose probably, if they were like, all right, if we can't get a result at Austin playing against Austin FC, wounded, like things need to change. Austin came out on top.
It was an insane game as well, which, you know what I just realized that I didn't even click together earlier is like MLS like named like Rui Diaz the man of the match day, and Sebastian Driussi had two amazing goals in this game. Not like the second one being the game winner in the 101st minute, which was insane. But yeah, pretty back and forth game. San Jose going up early and then, and, you know, extending to a 2-0 lead, and then Austin battling back, going up, and then San Jose ties it again, and then it goes all the way into the 11th minute of stoppage time, and Sebastian Driussi just drills a penalty from the, or not a penalty, a free kick. Or, oh my gosh. A volley. I cannot. That was horrible. A volley from the top of the box.
Yeah, wild game. You have San Jose, and they could have been up 3-0 if not for a disallowed goal. Austin had a disallowed goal as well, where John O'Brien just runs straight to the crowd, grabs his kid, and starts, like, celebrating.
Second week in a row, that guy celebrated prematurely.
I feel bad for the guy. He ended up getting a goal, but, yeah, this is just, this is one of those games where it's, like, you would love to say this is, like, a great showcase for MLS. And these are two not great teams, but you just have a back-and-forth game, competitive, lots of goals, great crowd, comebacks, disallow goals. It has it all. This is MLS. This isn't Brentford playing against Watford.
You love to see it because on paper, a lot of people counted this game out. This was supposed to be the boring snooze fest. But at the same time, it makes sense that this would be the most exciting game of the weekend.
We're going to move on. Chicago Fire, a big club, hosting the Houston Dynamo. And Chicago Fire wins 2-1 over the Dynamo. Yeah.
I love seeing Eastern Conference teams take points off Western Conference teams.
That's exactly what I was rooting for. You got Shaqiri scoring a penalty early on, Ibrahim Aliyu scoring a nice goal from outside of the box, and then not too long after, Brian Gutierrez with a nice chip just to score on Steve Clark.
That was the winner. That was a crazy chip. Like, we watched the highlights before this, and just the ball, like, goes out of the frame of the camera and then just drops back down into the goal. It's pretty cool to see. But, yeah, Chicago pulling out another result. Not a terrible start for them this year. I mean, are they building something special out in Chicago?
They're in 10th place. I feel like they're always in 10th place, like, slightly out of the playoffs. They're never, like, the worst team in the league, but they – well, sometimes they are, but
– they're – 2 wins, 2 draws, 3 losses. Not a horrible start there, but
it feels like
definitely could be better. Considering they're playing in the Eastern Conference.
Right.
Not a terrible start.
Yeah, I mean, winning against what's turned out to be a pretty good Houston team the last few weeks is no small foot. Minnesota hosting RSL. Pretty decent game on paper. It ends a 1-1 draw in Minnesota. We got Chicho Arango scoring in the 24th minute with a bullet header. You got Tani Aluwasi getting the equalizer in the 87th minute. Minnesota gets a red card in the 89th. The points are shared.
Minnesota has to be the worst home record team I've ever seen. I was reading about this, but it's kind of funny because it's like one of those things you just kind of have like a feeling about always. Like, you're just always like, man, when's the last time they won at home? And then you read about it, and it's true. Like, I think they've only won 5 of their last, like, 20 home games.
No wonder Ben, our buddy who lived out there, never...
I don't think that's why he didn't go.
Lived 5 minutes outside of the stadium and never bothered to go to a game once in, like, 3 years.
It's kind of wild. It's such a weird, like... It's such, like, a universal thing that most teams are just better at home. But apparently not for Minnesota.
Yep. I don't really want to talk too much about a draw.
Good point for RSL.
Nashville hosting the Philadelphia Union, and 2-1 win for Philly in Nashville. They come back as well. You know what's funny? Once again, before I notice anything about this game, Sam Surridge scores a header in this. He scored like 2 headers since you made a comment on here
that,
saying he never scores header goals, which is kind of funny to me. He's a fan of the MLS Net Boys podcast, but Carranza gets on the board. Gazdag wins it in the 98th minute. Philadelphia with a, you know, looking good after a kind of underwhelming start. They're second place in the East. I was pretty low on Philly. Nashville drops to 12th place. They've only got one win this year. If you're Nashville, if you're their supporters, are you Gary Smith out yet?
I was Gary Smith out 2 years ago. Absolutely. It's just, what are you doing if you aren't able to grind out results with your most boring play style? It just seems like they're out of ideas. I did see he came out and said that, like, he's going to go talk with their sporting director. Something about they're going to be trying to sign another one or two players. Who do they sign? What do they exactly sign for? Because I don't think he's changing his play style. He has probably one of the best defenses in the league when you look at it on paper. What position does he sign for? Who is he trying to bring in here?
You know, could be depth, because they've been pretty unfortunate with injuries this year. Zimmerman's been out. Jack Maher. Joe Willis.
I did see that picture of their like, just all their injured guys up in, like, the stands, and it just looks like a pretty bang average, like, MLS side.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I agree, but
it looks like the lineup you'd see in, like, a U.S. Open Cup game in years past.
I think I was pretty high on this team. I think they have, when they're healthy, I mean, one of the best back lines in the league, but it's just one of those things where it's fizzled out, and it's kind of like Seattle for me. This is the squad they organized, and they decided it was pretty much good to go, barring a few pieces, and now they're all hurt, they're injured, but, you know, injuries are always unfortunate, but it's poor roster management, in my opinion. My last thing I want to bring up about this game, on the MLS.com website, it's Nashville managers. Gary Smith's their manager, obviously. It says Kosuke Kimura, former Timbers fullback. You remember that guy during our worst ever season? It says he's the match day, like, one of the people on the coaching staff for Nashville.
Timbers taking over the league. I heard somebody, I was listening to Judah Newby, the Talk Timbers host, and he called Minnesota United Timbers East. Because there's, like Fernando
even
Audi.
Though they're on the, even though they're well, on the west.
Well, I think he called them that because they're, like, more east than the Timbers. But, like, Fernando Audi is, like, a youth coach there and, like, part of, like, their assistant coaching staff. I think
Cameron Knowles.
Cameron Knowles is there. They had, like, two other guys, like, involved in their organization that all have come from the Timbers. So it's kind of funny. I've noticed that, like, random guys from the Timbers make their way around the league somehow.
Love to see it.
I wanted to give Judah Newbies a little
give
bit
him,
of a
give him
love.
A shout out.
Yeah.
Respect. That's a great podcast. I'm gonna move on. I don't even want to talk much about this. St. Louis hosting Dallas, 0-0 in St. Louis. There were so many, like, shots though in this game that were just, like, fizzed over the bar, wide.
Almost all of them came from St. Louis, who
this is a terrible game for finishing.
St. Louis, a team that historically doesn't really want possession. They had 67% possession in this game. I was watching kind of bits and pieces of it, and basically you could sum it up by Samuel Adeniran just smashing at the ball as hard as he can, like, into the crowd, just whizzing past the post, and then, like, same thing for, like, Joao Klaus, just, like, pinging it off the crossbar. Like, it wasn't exactly a boring game by any means. But when you just look at it, it's like nothing really to talk about there.
Reminds me of when you'd be in, like, middle school and you'd be, like, playing soccer in, like, PE in, like, a gym. And you're usually not playing with a ton of people who, like, play soccer. So I remember me and my buddy, we would always be playing. And they wouldn't give us, like, real, like, soccer balls if we were playing indoor. If we were playing outside, we would. But they would use kind of, like, those, like,
The foam ones.
And I remember me and my buddy Ben, we would just try and kick the ball as hard as we can just blast it against the wall. And I remember we got in trouble one time. It's when we would do the Jewsbury first time strike. If you know, you know.
Dude, kind of a weird game when you think about it, when you just break it down. Because I was thinking back through all these chances, and when you were talking about how all these guys are just kicking as hard as they can, basically. I could think of, like, three chances off the top of my head that were within the 6-yard box that were all missed. Samuel Dinneran had one. Dante Seeley with a cross, a and he's right on the doorstep, wide open goal, blasted over the bar. João Klaus inside the 6-yard box hits the top crossbar. Kind of crazy. We've talked far too long about a 0-0 game. Let's move on to... We can just brush through this one. Seattle Sounders beat Montreal 5-0.
Are they back? Are they back?
Just everybody is going to fawn over this team. We've been quick to talk about the issues with Seattle, and we've both said this before. They looked good in this game. Seattle looked good. But this is a Montreal team that has been on a very long away game stint. They have some injuries. They got a red card in the 53rd minute.
New manager, a lot of new pieces.
There's a lot at play here. And I was telling you, I listened to the Extra Time podcast, and they're talking about on American Soccer Analysis, they have this like goals added stat or something, which kind of, it's like this really in-depth, like they've been tracking it for a long time, like different field positions and every pass and dribbles and different like sequences of play and how they're basically their XG from it. And Seattle Sounders are like ranked second in that, like not just based off shots, but everything in sequence of play. Kind of pointing that they're getting into good positions, so it's going to turn good eventually. But what I have to say to that is it hasn't. It's kind of, it's like one of those stats, like I'm a pretty big like stats nerd when it comes to soccer. That's one of those stats where I'm just like, this is too much at this point. Like
trying to explain why the team they predicted all to finish the best in the West is actually pretty good.
Yeah, it felt like a big reach for a team that has seemed pretty dry for ideas and took until like the fourth match week to score a goal from the open play.
Yeah, give me this Seattle for two, heck, I'd say 3 weeks, but even 2 weeks in a row where they can win a game, score goals from open play, not just rely on penalties. And then I think we can talk about Seattle more seriously. I don't want to like diminish it and say like, you know, this is a fluke, but it's 1 week. It's a big win. And let's see it happen a couple more times before we get too high on Seattle. I mean, they definitely shouldn't be the worst team in the West. I'll say it. It's kind of like the Revs for me. That spot belongs to San Jose and Austin. Sounders should be a good team, but I don't think they've shown anything that indicates that they're back or that they should be a top team in the West this year.
Is Brian Schmetzer going to be on the hot seat? It's been a bad start. This is a statement win for them. But when you look at their schedule coming up, they got FC Dallas next.
A lot of games.
It's away in Dallas. They have a lot of games coming up. Away in Dallas, I'm just going to focus on MLS games. Could be a tough game. Any game in Texas is going to be difficult for most teams. Then they host Vancouver. They go away to DC. I think they replay their game against Philadelphia. They got suspended, so they go away to Philly. And then they host LA Galaxy and then go away to Portland. So other than that Dallas game, that's a pretty tough stretch of games. You got Vancouver, DC, Philadelphia, Galaxy, and then the Timbers.
A lot of travel. I mean, for me, it's like a three. I don't know. Dallas and Portland would be, if I had to guess, the most winnable of those teams. I would say personally, maybe you throw DC in there, but DC hasn't really looked bad this year. So,
especially going away to DC, you're going cross country and to go play against a good DC team.
It's just a heavy packed schedule. And it's like we were saying last week, this could be like make or break for their season. They got the 3 points here, which was needed. If they lost this game somehow, it would have been rough to look at this stretch. A lot of games in a tight window. But this little stretch here could make or break the season. I'm curious to see if they add anybody, like what their plan is, because their DPs are aging. Well, two of them are, Rusnak and Rui Diaz. Rui Diaz, I would say hasn't looked great, but he's got 4 goals this year, albeit 3 of them are penalties. So I'm not really sure what to think here. He's been hurt a lot. He hasn't played a lot of games, but I don't want to talk about the Sounders. Sucks for Montreal, but they got 7 points out of 6 games on the road, so little more than a point on the road. And everybody always says if you draw your away games, like, you'll be in good shape. So good for Montreal for not in this game, but doing decent on the road trip. Sounders, well done.
Let's move on to the best game of the weekend, other than San Jose, Austin, of course. You got SKC hosting our beloved Portland Timbers in a thrilling tale of two halves here. Truly, like, the best definition of a tale of two halves. 3-3. This is what every kid, you've heard it growing up. If they can do it in the first half, we can do it in the second. Everybody's heard that.
It's like our Pro Cubs lobbies when we're down 8-0 at halftime to Peanut Butter FC.
That's some lore right there. This I don't even know where to start with this game. One thing I'll say right off the bat, you go on MLS.com and you get all these long write-ups about each game, this huge paragraph about the Sounders and how they're back, this and that. And then for this game, it just goes, after allowing 3 goals in the first half, Portland scored 3 times in the second. That was the whole write-up for this game. You love to see, like, a thrilling... There's so many storylines here. Eric Miller gets his first career MLS goal. SKC looked... They were lights out in the first half. Like, Timbers are really poor, but Willie Agata looked really good. They were pinning us back in our half. The way they played was pretty dominant. Timbers just couldn't really find anything in the second half. Like, SKC just seemed way more up for it. As soon as we'd get in their half, it was like a lack of movement from the Timbers, but also just like the SKC just suffocated us and forced us to play like 75-yard back passes or something like that. But yeah, what are your thoughts on this game here?
Like you said, a true tale of two halves. I didn't really watch the first half or the second half live, so I just watched Kansas City put the beat down on my team.
That was funny. In our group chat, Jacob was all like texting like during the first half, and we were just pretty negative. And then second half, Jacob's just silent. Nobody's hearing from him. And then after the game, he just comes back. He's like, dude, I was gone. What the heck happened?
I'm going to look at this from the Kansas City perspective because we'll talk a lot about Portland, obviously. Man, to just freaking blow this game, I saw a stat that said, I forget exactly how many points, it was at least 9 that they've had dropped from winning positions this year, and if they'd gotten like half of those points, they'd be up there in the Shield race. And it just gotta suck. It's just really gotta blow. Like, What do you do in this? Is it a mentality thing? Is it like, I know Peter Vermees didn't really substitute till pretty late in this game. He only used 2 out of 5 subs. Like, is PV on the hot seat? They had a big win last week. What do you think Kansas City does from here?
I don't think PV's on the hot seat because this isn't nearly as terrible as their start last year. But yeah, I don't know. It is, I don't know if it's like a mentality thing. They're just at a weird crossroads right now where they're really, like, still an elite team in MLS, but for whatever reason, start of the season, they just cannot seem to find their form. They can't close out games at all.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. For me, it's definitely a better start, no question, than last season, but, I mean, he's been here for 15 years. Is this the year where they realize it's gone stale? Because it feels like the fans are in that boat.
It is crazy he's been with SKC since their inception as a club, because he was there as a player, and then he joined the coaching staff. So he's been with SKC forever.
He's the only coach that I started watching in 2011 when Portland joined. He's the only coach who's been there the entire time, by a long shot, I'm pretty sure. Like,
absolutely. Remember when like Jurgen Klinsmann left the U.S. men's national team? Peter Vermees was a name that was floated out there pretty heavily, along with like Caleb Porter and Greg Berhalter. That was like a pinnacle of like American coaches in MLS right there. You got the three salty dogs right there.
I have no idea what to say about that. I mean, I will say, like, back then, Kansas City was one of the best teams in the league, both play-wise, when the way they would look on the field, results, winning trophies, challenging for trophies. But the last, like, five seasons or so,
yeah,
they haven't really done much, honestly.
Yeah, I would agree. They've definitely grown a little stale. I think one thing, like, without getting rid of Peter Vermees, because it's almost, he's almost seems like he's tenured at this point. Like, it almost seems like they can't fire him.
He's the Sir Alex Ferguson of...
I think the only thing they could really do to kind of help, like, revolutionize his club is to bring in, like...
Ronaldo.
I'd say, like, a CSO, like a chief, like, soccer operations officer, whatever they call him, like a sporting director, essentially. Because right now, Peter Vermees is doing everything. So he gets to decide what players come to this club, if he likes a player. And maybe that's why they're getting so stale. Like, the league has grown so much since he started as a coach, and he found a lot of success early on. But they've slowed down a lot as the league has grown. So maybe bringing in somebody else that can take away a little bit of that burden, let him focus more on the coaching aspect of it. Or maybe he does need to leave. Maybe he needs to find a new club. Maybe he's San Diego's, you know, new coach.
I could think of a lot worse hires than Peter Vermees.
There's a lot of teams in MLS that would be pretty fortunate to get a Peter Vermees. I'll end with this about old PV. Would you rather have had him than Greg Berhalter as the U.S. men's national team coach? When you look at his legacy as a coach versus Greg Berhalter's...
I mean, within MLS, I think Peter Vermees undeniably was better tenured, especially at that point. So I'd probably say yes.
I would agree. I think coaching-wise, he's a better coach. Greg Berhalter, probably a little more approachable to those young European guys that are looking to join the team. Can't imagine Peter Vermees with his, like...
Barking them down.
His, like, butch haircut, just smacking on a piece of gum. Just
he looks like a drill sergeant, if I've ever seen one. Good point for Portland.
Good point for Portland. Rough for SKC to give it up again. And that is every game.
Every game. That's the least we've talked about the Timbers.
That was kind of weird. We did talk a lot about SKC.
Hey, we give everybody the shine. This is the MLS Net Boys podcast. This isn't extra time where we're going to talk about what Messi had for breakfast and
we show
how
some,
Seattle's the best team in the world.
We show some love to just about everybody here, but... I wanted to touch on something we brought up earlier. The Generation Adidas Cup has just wrapped up. For anybody that doesn't know, this is a competition. It's a youth competition here in the States with the MLS Academies. You get a U15 bracket. You get a U17 bracket. And they play against almost every other MLS team. And then you get a bunch of big... academies from around the world will send their players. You got Manchester United, Porto, Flamengo. You got, I think, Bayern have sent their teams in the past, Real Madrid, Valencia. So you get teams from all over the world sending their academies, and you get to see these young American players play against some top, top talent in this knockout competition. They do a group stage. They split into two brackets. They have the championship bracket. They have the kind of rest of the teams who didn't perform quite as highly, just so they can still get experience and play. And honestly, kind of one of my favorite things that MLS does. I think this is an awesome tournament, gives our players a ton of exposure, and we've seen a lot of players start to come through. It's still a fairly new competition, hasn't been going on since the inception of the league, but you see a lot of players start to come through, a lot of big names. And I love this tournament. I don't know, what do you have any hot takes about GA Cup?
Not really. I don't watch it, but I agree with you. It's I'm not one of those sickos who's like watching these like
Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah, I see a lot of stuff. You talk about him a lot. I'm not talking about you, but there's like literal personalities and like major like U.S. soccer heads who are like posting like Kevin Sullivan just wore these like Prada like Nike collab boots.
I did see that. That was weird.
And it's like, dude, he's 14. This is like kind of weird. Like, I don't know.
Wild that a 14-year-old. I found his they like posted him and tagged him on Instagram. I looked at his Instagram account. It's crazy, like a 14-year-old has like 50,000 followers.
It's just kind of weird
for like being an academy player.
Like, I don't know. I'm not going to be one of those guys who hypes up every single prospect to be like the next thing. in U.S. soccer, we know from Freddie Adu, most notably, that that's not the case. Maybe Julian Green you throw in there, but...
I will say the difference between Freddie Adu and these players now is a lot of the hype that came for Freddie Adu came, like, from, like, American media. Like, a lot of these people, like, building up hype around him. And now you see, like, a lot of, like, European, like, clubs validating this hype around, like, academy players. Like, you see, like, European clubs, like, coming to the U.S. and trying to, like, steal academy players away. Not necessarily saying, like, Kevin Sullivan's definitely been, like, a little outblown, I'd say. But you see, like, a Bayern and Man City and all these other academies coming, trying to, like, steal players and bring them away just to have them in their system. So I'd say it's a little different, but I would agree. I think it is a little bit too much pressure on these players to be talking about them as they're these next, you know, the next savior, the next golden generation of the U.S. But I just love it. I think it's awesome. I coach soccer. I just love youth soccer. I think it's awesome. I think seeing it at the highest level has been fun to see how it's developed and grown in this country. So this is one of my favorite competitions to watch games, watch highlights. I'm not going to lie. I don't sit down and watch full GA Cup games, but I will check out highlights. I will watch some of the goals. But yeah, this year is wrapped up. The U15 tournament was won by Valencia from Spain. U17 was won by Philadelphia Union.
Vamos.
Back-to-back winners. 2 years in a row now. Kevin Sullivan, who we recently mentioned, won it twice with them now. Kind of cool to see. He's actually playing with Philly's second team. So he's technically a professional soccer player now, which is cool to see. But I wanted to quiz Jacob a little bit. Not necessarily quiz, but kind of a little game around this. We wanted to keep this episode semi-short, so we didn't want to go too in-depth with any games here, but I got a list of GA Cup alumni, players who've played in it that have since gone on, had a professional career, and I got two different lists here. I got a list of MLS players, and then I got a list of foreign players who've come with their team and played here. What list do you want to start with first?
Give me the foreign players. Let's
get them out of the way.
And with the best.
Let's get them out of the way. All right, we got a list of foreign players. I'm going to do a blind draft. I only got five here. So you got to rank these guys based off whatever you want. It could be their career. Could be their potential. It could be their GA Cup performance. Could be the car they drive. I don't care.
There's one player I think I know. The rest, I'm not educated. Educate me.
First up, we got Julian Alvarez. That's a hot player to start with.
World
right?
Cup sounds, winner, Champions League winner.
Pause. I didn't mean that. That's a. I don't know what I meant there.
Play wise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Career wise. Number one.
Number one.
Because if I'm thinking right, this tournament hasn't been here super, super long. And based off of accomplishments, it's going to be tough to beat that, probably. But number one.
Julian
Alvarez.
Good answer. Next up, you have Enzo Fernandez.
Woo. Also part of that World Cup winning squad. Young player of the tournament, if I recall. There's got to be somebody better, though. Or is it just all these young... Okay, I'll go three.
Three? Safe bet. Next up, the dancing man himself, Lucas Paqueta.
Oh.
You know who I'm talking about? He does that weird, like... It became a trend. He does, like, a weird dance when he scores for Brazil.
Yeah. I'll go four.
Four. Next up, we got Ferran Torres. This guy has fallen off the face of the earth.
Yeah, I'm going to go five for now.
Safe. That leaves you...
You don't hear much about him anymore.
Your number two option, who's just kind of starting his career in Europe, Kobbie Mainoo.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
That guy has been awesome for Man United.
Just got capped for England as well, huh?
Yeah, he's been really fun to watch. So you ended your list with Julian Alvarez as one, Kobbie Mainoo at second, Enzo Fernandez at three, Lucas Paqueta at four, and Ferran Torres at 5.
I'd change Enzo at 2, Paqueta at 3, Kobe Mainoo at 4, and then I'm happy with that.
That's honestly, I was looking through these players, and there's other players, of course, but these are like the most 5, like, notable to me. Crazy to think that these guys were like 14, 15, 16 and like came to the U.S. and played against like our top academy prospects. Kind of cool to think about.
Pretty nice. Well done, MLS. Well done. Only in America you'd have a tournament like this.
Well done, MLS. All right, I'm going to do this next one a little different. We're not doing a blind draft. We're doing it bracket style here. I got a list of 8 notable MLS Academy alumni. Doesn't mean they played in MLS, but they came through an MLS Academy, and they played in the GA Cup. And I'm going to pit 2 guys against each other. You have to pick who you would say is same criteria. Could be better player, better career, better future, whatever. First up, Gabriel Slonina or Cade Cowell?
That is a tricky one.
Because I put those 2 guys specifically because I know you don't rate Cade Cowell, and Slonina has like 1 professional season under his belt.
Oh, man. I mean, I feel like potential-wise, I don't know, because Cade Cowell was like supposed to be a big thing. Like, not like world-class, like he's going to take over Europe, but he turned pro when he was 15, I want to say, maybe 16.
Yeah.
Slonina, I don't know. I mean, I'll go Slonina. It feels like Cade Cowell had not as much of a progression, kind of stagnated at San Jose and then went to Chivas and is doing all right.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Next up, you have Gio Reyna.
I knew this one was coming because I saw an article about him.
And Tyler Adams.
Give me Tyler Adams.
That was a no-brainer. I should have pitted Gio Reyna against somebody a little bit different, but this is how the bracket shook out.
I mean, Gio Reyna, quality's there, undeniable. Attitude probably needs adjusting, and unfortunately for him, injury-prone as can be, and that's really... I mean, Tyler Adams, though, has been out for a while as well, but...
He did get player of the match recently, and I think he started and played like a full 90.
For Bournemouth, yeah, he did. Yeah. But then this last game, he was off on the injury report due to stomach or lower body issues or something like that. So give me Tyler Adams.
That's a good safe bet there. Next up, you got Ricardo Pepi or Weston McKennie.
That is, well,
both came through Dallas. FC Dallas.
Dallas has an impressive pipeline. I'm going McKennie. Once again, just accomplish more. Pepi could be, honestly, I he's my top pick for U.S. striker, but really? Weston McKennie.
You put Pepi over Balogun?
Balogun hasn't been as impressive with the national team, and he hasn't had a great season for Monaco this year, so.
It's fair. I would pick Balogun. I'd say Pepe's up there with a shout, but if you're going based off this season, I'd say Josh Sargent.
Pepi hasn't had a great year this year either, but I don't rate Josh Sargent, sorry.
He's been elite in the championship.
That's true, but he hasn't scored since 2019, and that was against Cuba for the U.S. So
got to give a man service, though. You got to give a man service. If you're letting him play with the B team.
No, I mean, here's my plug. Jesus Ferreira, everybody bags on that guy. I don't think he should be our number 9, but he scores at least against the Minnows. Josh Sargent, get this man out.
I disagree. Maybe we should just pull a Cincinnati and just take our backup center defensive mid and put him at striker. Luca Della Torre, new starting number 9.
Johnny Cardoso.
All right, last little matchup of the first round here. You got Benjamin Kremashki and Brendan Aaronson.
Give me Brendan Aaronson.
A little bit more established.
More established. Had a few good years. Couple good seasons in MLS. Won a Shield. Got a move abroad. Decent player at Salzburg.
You're not going to consider Kremashki at all?
I like the potential on him. I like that he's already gotten looks with the senior national team, but not yet. And it doesn't help that he's been injured this season, so I haven't really been able to watch.
Fair enough. Going into the next round, Slonina versus Tyler Adams. How do you even compare these guys?
I was going to say, I'm not sure, but it's pretty obvious. It's got to be Tyler Adams, captain of the national team. And I will say, true pipeline of the U.S. soccer system. You got from Academy, you got GA Cup, going to the secondary USL squad at the time of an MLS team, winning a championship there, being brought into the first team, winning a Shield, being a successful player, then getting transferred to Europe, national team captain at the World Cup. Love to see it.
In my opinion, the best American player right now.
I'd agree. Between him and Pulisic for me. Yeah, close.
I love his story. Like you said, he was actually the first signing for Red Bull's their second team, essentially. And now he's actually started his own club in New Jersey as an academy program that's supposed to be that top tier. Super cool story. We got McKinney versus Aronson. I think I already know, but I wanna hear you
give
me
boys.
I want to hear you give a really good explanation as to why.
It's McKinney. Any shocker there? Once again, just more established. Because Brandon Aronson was playing decent in Austria, in the Austrian Bundesliga for Red Bull Salzburg. But the Leeds loan, or his time there, didn't really pan out great, honestly. He started off decently well. Or he was a player the fans appreciated, it seemed like. Always electric, always bringing all the energy. But it didn't turn out great for really any of the Americans at Leeds. And Weston McKennie has become an important player at Juventus, one of the biggest clubs in the world, bigger than most clubs in England. And it's cool to see an American. It was cool to see.
I like how he snuck that in there.
Well, because I didn't mean that as a proper diss, but some people say he failed in the Premier League because he had a bad loan at Leeds, and he was pretty bad there. He was out of shape. He wasn't doing well. But Juventus, barring City, United, Liverpool, certain years for United, Juventus is a proper storied big club in world football, and it's cool to see an American there. I remember when I was getting into soccer, 2011, 2010, and we'd have Dempsey at Fulham, we'd have Tim Howard at Everton, and that felt like big things. But watching somebody like an Aaron Johansson getting game time in the Dutch league, or
that was crazy
stuff.
That's
like
a deep
that,
pull right there.
Stuff like that, where you this was our chance for European, or Julian Green for the Bayern reserves, and seeing him score goals, and it was that was our hope. But now we have an American at Juventus. That's pretty cool. I remember for me watching that Juventus Barcelona tie, just seeing Messi with Sergiño Dest, which wasn't a great loan spell either. And then Ronaldo with Weston McKennie. And then Weston McKennie scored at Barcelona in the tie. And it was just cool to see Americans duking it out on the big stage with the biggest players in the world. That's my long spiel.
I don't disagree with you. The one thing that puts Weston McKennie above or below Brendan Aronson for me, he never played for FC Dallas's first team. Declined a homegrown contract.
Right to Schalke.
Went to Schalke. The absolute... That's just...
Disrespectful.
Meanwhile, you got Brendan Aronson putting in a quality 51 appearances for Philadelphia after 21 for Bethlehem Steel, their second team. But that leaves you with a final matchup of a question that a lot of people ask with our current U.S. men's national team: Weston McKennie or Tyler Adams?
Really tricky. Kind of two different players.
I want to point out, first of all, super cool that two of the most important players in the U.S. men's national team right now have come through MLS academies and played at this tournament, played at the GA Cup, made it all the way through the ranks at a U.S. an MLS academy, and now are two of arguably the most important players for the U.S.
And you kind of see that scattered throughout the national team. Giarena, Matt Turner, Tim Ream, like a lot of these guys, even if they didn't play in MLS like McKinney, they were properly developed in our system, which is cool. For me, once again, it's Tyler Adams taking the cake. The closest one, though, because both these guys, like you said, two of our most important, two of our best players, but Tyler Adams properly shows like the pipeline, like I mentioned, from the U.S. developing players, and I feel like we're going to see a lot more of these stories developed in the academy, going to GA Cup, USL or Next Pro now to MLS first team, and then to Europe, and then the national team.
I would agree. I love to see this sort of thing, even, you know, with a lot of the hype that you get around these players at GA Cup, such as like a Kevin Sullivan, just like the trust that they have and like people have in MLS academies now to develop these players. Because I don't know if we've talked about it on here, but Kevin Sullivan signed a deal with Man City, but they want him to stay and develop at Philadelphia until he's 18, which is kind of cool to see. There's a lot of other reasons, you know, passports, work permits, all this sort of thing. But really cool that MLS academies have that respect on the global stage now, that a team like Man City will purchase this player and then be like, no, we're not going to take him to one of our other clubs. We're going to let him develop at your club because you're doing such a great job already.
Just funny because they own one of the other
MLS
clubs.
They own another MLS team.
Who's a direct rival. Yeah, that is true. That's a good point. Respect. Respect for Philly. Philly, Dallas, Red
Colorado.
Bulls. Colorado has an underrated academy. You're seeing a lot of these teams start to build like these decent systems and academies, and it's great to see.
I love it. And kind of bringing it back, you know, to wrap it up with the GA Cup, I think this is a huge reason why MLS clubs are focusing more on their academies. This is like a great opportunity, not just for your players to get experience, but also to get recognized. And like, this is where Kevin Sullivan made his name. And there's a lot of other players that are making their name and getting recognized on a global scale, because you have these academies from other clubs and they have scouts coming with them and watching all these games, and it's giving like 14, 15, 16 year olds like a chance to get scouted like by some of the best clubs in the world. So super cool in my opinion. I love the tournament. I wanted to highlight it a little bit, but we'll wrap it up now. We're getting close to the end. How long have we been even going for?
Hour 22. Shout out to Jeff Atanella for covering the
that
GA
was cool.
Cup.
That was pretty cool. I miss that guy. I wish he was a little bit more involved with the Timbers, but I don't blame him for wanting to live in Florida.
Yeah, that's his hometown. I respect him always like shouting out the club, and he always says like his best and most memorable years came playing for Portland. Which is cool to see.
Respect.
I had a tough moment, I won't lie. I was doing some cleaning at our place, and my giant cardboard life-size cutout of Jeff Antonell was sitting there, and I was like, I'm not going to use this. Like, and I threw it out.
You didn't even donate it or something?
It was like,
couldn't have, like, you know, given it to a shelter.
It was one of those things where it was like, it was creased because I had it like folded in half for when I moved. So it was already like bent, so it like wouldn't stay upward. So then I like duct taped it to like my closet sliding door so I could like slide it and it would like stand, and then like ripped off part of the back, ripped off part of the closet door, like the paint off of it. And I was like, oh man,
should have just kept it in your passenger seat so you could just drive down the freeway in the
carpool in.
Take it up to a Timbers game
up
with
to
you.
Seattle, we're doing that. Yeah. This year.
That'd be pretty elite at a Timbers
even though
game
we bring...
if that was your sign, just Jeff Atanella cutout.
Even though whenever we go to games, it's always like with, you know, somebody else. It's
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We have a person anyway with us. So
the rest of us have to sit in the back seat because the front's designated for Jeff Atanella cutout.
Respect. Oh, Jeff Atanella, come on the MLS Net Boys show.
I would love that. We'll shout out Smack Apparel or whatever that company is.
Maybe he'll invite us out to a Tampa Bay Lightning game of hockey or whatever it is.
I kind of appreciate that that guy's like an all sports like dude, because he just covers everything.
He's like a legit,
and he writes children's books too, which is cool.
Jack of all trades. You love to see it. It's what we bring in Portland.
We love it. We love it. Let's move on to some predictions here, though. Jacob is pulling away with an early lead, but I'm about to ace this week. I'm going to get every result exactly right. I'll tell you who scores, when they score. And if I do that, Jacob owes me a Wendy's milkshake. First up, though, we got San Jose hosting the Colorado Rapids. I'm going with a 1-0 Colorado win. I think San Jose is going to try and pack it in, play a little bit more defensive, but Cole Bassett, Mr. Clutch.
Mr. Colorado, Cole Bassett himself. I'm going 2-1 Rapids, same thing. I think San Jose gets one, but the Rapids have shown to be kind of like road dogs. They won at Salt Lake. They got a point at Seattle, at Miami. Well done, Rapids.
You love to see it. This is very off topic, but you just brought up the RSL Colorado game. Can you please explain that meme you sent me today? that epitomizes the growth of MLS culture.
It was like this account. It was an account you sent me on Instagram. Chase sends me this edit of Chris Armas with like the Breaking Bad like font of like the element squares, and it's just him with like a weird filter just staring into the camera. And it just was Rapids versus LAFC. Time to bounce back on the big stage. This is Rapids Corner on Instagram, a dedicated Colorado Rapids updates, graphics, and news account. And they post these edits and stuff. And they're kind of cool. They're kind of interesting. They're kind of funny. Well, when they played at Real Salt Lake, they have a Star Wars edit. And it, like, it looked pretty funny. Rapid Man, their weird mascot from the 90s, who they like budgeted out but then brought back like a couple years back. This guy in the 90s, it was literally just like this blue, he looks like a pool noodle, like cut yeah. in half on his head. And he wears like goggles that are like tight, strapped around the back of his head. And then he has like the Bart Simpson's haircut, but he's all blue and he has just like a cartoon effect smile. He's just really goofy looking guy. We did it on our mascot rankings one time. But then they posted this edit of him in the Real Salt Lake Stadium, like with a Jedi cape and like a lightsaber, like with the Darth Vader stance, like ready to just go off on somebody. And then they put in Star Wars font, Rocky Mountain Cup, Episode 1.
Oh, man.
An awesome edit for an account, and it only got 8 likes total.
Dude, that takes like a lot of effort to make something like that, too. That made me so happy seeing that, but I had to bring that up because
I love seeing stuff like that. You're right. You kind of joke about it, but it shows growth that we have people making like legit, like kind of like Bleacher Report or like 433 style edits. Obviously, it's not professional grade, well, but
I love seeing that rather than like random like 433 post like Neymar wearing like a Miami jersey or like something like that. Like I love seeing the cool like niche
creative
like MLS, like not just around the big teams, like the small teams that have like a fun little culture around them.
That's shows,
pretty cool.
It shows the growth and yeah, the development of a culture.
Love it. You love it. But we'll move. You said your scoreline already.
2-1 Rapids.
Moving on, we have Atlanta hosting the Philadelphia Union, the last undefeated team in MLS.
Kind of crazy. Doesn't feel like it.
It doesn't feel like it. I think that changes. I think Atlanta wins 3-2, but I think it's going to be a really tight game. This is definitely the game to watch this weekend.
Atlanta seems to always dominate in these home games. I'm going to 2-2 draw, though. I've seen a lot of, I don't know if hard is the right word, but Philly's kind of turned it up. They won against a good Minnesota, got 3 points at Portland, which is a hard place to get a win, and then just dunking on Nashville in stoppage time to win with a late result. I'm going a 2-2 draw. I think they get something.
I wouldn't doubt it, but I feel like Giakoumakis is just like the most clutch guy in the league right now, and he's going to just be a big player for this game. We'll finish up with RSL hosting the Columbus Crew. I'm going 3-1 Columbus.
I'm going 3-2 Salt Lake. Not because I think they're a better team, but I think Chicho Arango is the most clutch player in the league right now. He's up there on the Golden Boot. He was kind of tied or in second place. But Kucha's going to miss this game. It's at Salt Lake. I feel like Salt Lake wins these weird games at home against like these teams like Columbus or against these bigger clubs. And I feel like it'll be a shootout where I'm not going to look at this result and think Salt Lake is better than Columbus, but it just feels like one they'll win.
I could see it. The only thing, I think Columbus is going to dominate this game. RSL doesn't have like the strongest defense. I could totally see this. Like you said, this is the most MLS thing that would happen. But RSL doesn't have the most strong defense, and they aren't that explosive on the counterattack. Like, what is Diego Luna just going to have some blistering pace? And
Anderson Julio, man.
I don't see them being good enough on the counterattack to really make Columbus pay. And like, Columbus is going to pin them in their own half, and Chicho Arango is just going to get super mad, like getting zero service.
Like you were saying, set pieces with RSL. Arango's going to score on, like, some, like, cross, like, in the box, like, free kick opportunity, which is a whipped-in ball from Luna or somebody like that, and score a header right into the ground, right
score
past.
Like, a consolation goal, and then Columbus will do, like, a 45-pass, like, move. And,
and then Kucha will get pissed and get a red card.
Keep the ball for the next, like, 15 minutes. Hey, it'll be a fun game to watch, though, but nonetheless.
Also, important to note, this will probably be a rotated squad due to Champions League. They're going to Tigres, to Mexico, then flying to Salt Lake. So
a rotated Columbus squad is still a dangerous, dangerous team. They have so much depth.
They do.
I would say their depth is still as good, if not better, than RSL's starters in a lot of positions.
I don't know if I'd say that, but I can see them winning, but 3-1 like you have written down, I can see them like a 1-0 or a 2-1 maybe, by like a goal, like a tight game.
I'm going to up it. I'm going to say 17-0.
That's going to be it for the MLS Snap Boys show.
We should just cut it right there. Just nothing, just episode done.
Email us, MLSNetBoys@gmail.com. Contact us on X. Give us a follow. MLS Net Boys on X.
Send us prompts. Send us questions. Send us games.
Send us your fun stuff.
Send us Colorado Rapids memes.
Honestly, send us any MLS memes. Chase and I always back and forth send each other a decent amount of niche MLS.
Anything memes. Obscure in MLS.
Like Ryan Raposo fan page.
Yaroslav Niezgoda fan page breaking news about the Timbers.
The Timbers' third goalkeeper. We got to get that guy on the pod, man. That guy's probably distraught now that Niezgoda's not on the team, man. Like,
I need to go find that account. I wonder if he's just still following him.
We got to send him like a gift card or something. A meal on us, just
a $5, $5 Chili's gift card.
You can almost pay for a side of mozzarella sticks or something. I don't know. I've never been to a Chili's in my life.
Pay for half of an onion tower.
Is Chili's pretty much like Applebee's, I'm assuming? Or
basically, just with a cooler jingle like in their commercials. But yeah, I've never been to a Chili's, but everything I've seen from them looks essentially the same.
The only time I was in one was when I was in Las Vegas, and it was like, well, I'm not going to go to Chili's while I'm in Las Vegas, so...
We should do that one of these times. Rank, like chain sit-down restaurants. I would rather talk about that before I talk about the Prim.
Same. We got to do one fast food / chain restaurants.
Oh, man. That's
which MLS team are they?
Oh, okay. I was going to say, that's a cursed topic. We've had many arguments about that in the party chat.
We probably will tonight.
I'm going to bring it up.
That and the Man City 115 financial breaches while Everton got deducted 2 points this morning.
Well, actually, we'll call it there. Thank you all for listening. As always,
Preston Judd,
come back on the show.
Back this week. Let's go.